When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Mirror Mall, the Daily Mirror's Six Nations podcast. I am Richard Innes, again, as ever, joined by Gavin Allen, my colleague on Mirror Online.
Bonjour, madame.
Bonjour. Despite that, he is a Wales fan, not a Frenchman. I am a Scotsman, for anyone who's questioning it immediately, thanks to my accent. And as ever, we are joined by Alex Spink, the Daily Mirror's rugby union correspondent, who is here to tell Gav and I why we are wrong about so many things, and also to keep us informed of what's going on the front lines, as it were, because you've been with England, well, I guess pretty much all this week, haven't you?
I have, ahead of the big game in Paris at the weekend, well, the big game for England. I think many people would say that Ireland-Scotland is the big game of the weekend, because Ireland have the chance to pull clear in the Championship and potentially even win the Championship this weekend if England's result goes against them. So, yeah, France-England, we're off there very shortly. Looking forward to a big weekend in Paris. It's always a good weekend.
We're
going on the train, the Eurostar. Nice. So we go down there Friday morning. Nice. It's always packed because people like to get there early, start the weekend off properly.
Well, if you're going to be in Paris for a weekend, make a weekend of it.
Absolutely.
No kind of vacationing weekends for Eddie Jones and his boys, though, of course. They've got quite a lot of selection headaches, injury problems. I mean, on top of everything else, coming off the back of a defeat, they've got quite a lot of questions to answer, haven't they? In more ways than one.
They have got a lot of questions to answer, yeah. And the fitness bulletin, which has come out at the start of the week, has created headaches for them. Dylan Hartley, the captain, England's second most capped player, he has a calf strain. That makes him a doubt, an injury scare. Whether or not he's going to be missing come Saturday is another question, but it's not ideal in the week when you're trying to get everything back together and build a winning performance out of a defeat. It's not ideal to be without your captain, your hooker, and such an experienced player. So there's a doubt about him. Sam Underhill, who most people felt would come straight into the team to sort out the problems they had at the breakdown against Scotland, because he is the out-and-out open side specialist, he's injured. Someone stood in his toe in training hard. He's in a boot. He's out of the game. Jack Knowles also out of the game, who was one of the few bright spots in terms of impact off the bench over the last couple of weekends. So three big headaches for Jones ahead of team selection on Thursday.
And it is pretty remarkable when you think about the scale of the impacts that we're talking about when guys are playing these sort of test matches in the Six Nations, that a guy who could have really helped solve England's biggest problem is ruled out because someone stepped on his toe.
Yeah, well, precisely.
Pretty remarkable, really. I mean, if your luck's not in, your luck's not in, isn't it? That's the old saying, guys.
At the risk of sounding a bit old, when we were younger, our boots seemed to be slightly more sturdy than the modern-day ones, which are made of this kind of kangaroo leather, and it seemed very easy to pick up.
Very, very old. You sound ancient. Good Lord.
But they're so much more stylish.
And colours.
Yeah. We're still not quite on footballer levels yet, are we, in terms of, you know, pink boots?
I think
boots
we're getting there.
The
I think we're getting there, for sure. Not quite pink, but that might be a step too far for rugby. But listen, if Hartley's injured, let's just play the what-if game, because it's always quite fun. If Hartley's injured, it means they need a new hooker. It means they need a new captain. So Jamie George would start at hooker. He was the Lions starting hooker in all three test matches in New Zealand, did a pretty tidy job. Owen Farrell would become captain. A lot of people, in fact, probably the majority of the country, feel he should be captain already, although I kind of beg to differ over that. And it means that Luke Cowan-Dickie, Exeter, the form hooker in the Premiership this season, would come on the bench. Now, an awful lot of people say, I rather like that scenario. Can we have that, please? Eddie Jones has nailed his colours to the mast with Hartley, and so he will want Hartley to be there leading them. But, you know, Hartley does divide opinion. It has become a Marmite subject. You know, we have a captain of England who comes off the pitch with 25 minutes to go in every game. That can't be ideal.
And there's a reason he didn't go on the Lions tour, presumably.
Well, yes. I mean, there are a number of reasons. I mean, clearly, his discipline down the years hasn't been great. Although for England, it pretty much, you know, always is. And yeah, they looked around and they found others that they preferred. So, you know,
I suppose as an England captain, you're always in the firing line, aren't you? You're always going to be that guy who, the moment anything starts to vaguely go wrong, you're going to be one of the people who's.
Of course, and you have to say, given that he's been banned. For more than a year in total in his career, the fact he's overtaken Johnny Wilkinson to win his 92nd cap and become England's second most cap of all time behind Jason Leonard, given that he does have that focus on him, you know, you have to give that to him as a remarkable achievement.
It is. Will Hartley be remembered that way in a few years' time, do you think?
I think it depends possibly on what England do at the, well, not possibly, almost certainly what England do at the next World Cup, because in purely stats terms, he's the most successful England captain of all time. You know, you can't argue with what they've done over the last 2.5 years under Jones, 24 wins, 26 games. You know, pretty much no one in world rugby. In fact, I think if you probably did the All Blacks last 26 games, I wouldn't have thought that would be as good as England's. But ultimately, do people remember those sort of facts? I don't know. I think, you know, it's all about what you win. It's about Six Nations titles. It's about
it's about perception as well. Brand is a hideous word in sport.
Yeah.
But he's perhaps not the most becoming character with his list of bans and his discipline in the years.
There was the sending off in the Premiership final as well, wasn't there? Was it the Premiership final?
There was. No, in the final. That was verbal abuse of a referee.
Yeah.
But, you know, perversely, that is why Eddie Jones likes him.
Yeah, absolutely.
He loves the fact that everyone else throws stuff at him,
yeah,
and he stands tall and is able to basically deliver all the good stuff for England and just fly in the face of criticism elsewhere, because it seems to give him bizarrely, it seems to give him some sort of authority within the England camp, which works well in a camp which isn't overflowing with individual leaders. Collectively, they normally look quite good, although against Scotland you would question their leadership. But individually, he stands head and shoulders above others in terms of what he brings and what he demands of other people. You know, he tells you, just to interrupt, he will tell you, if you are sitting at lunch, to turn your phone off.
Really?
Yeah, there's no phone, no mobile phones over lunch.
And he'll tell the players publicly, he'll stand up as the captain and say, turn that phone off.
Yeah. Yeah, he will enforce that.
See, that is quite impressive. I think that's what you want from. And I think it also goes back to your point about sort of reflecting the coach. And if you go across any sport, you know, whether it be rugby or football or cricket or whatever, the captain, the best captains are often reflections of their coaches or managers. And that's what you want, isn't it? That's what people talk about, is having kind of the manager or the coach on the pitch during that time. And so you can see that with Hartley, to go back to Gav's point about perception, that actually Hartley has that kind of, well, I frankly couldn't give a toss what you lot think about me. I'm here to win, which is the Eddie Jones mentality, isn't it?
100%, as Eddie would say. Yeah,
it's a motivating factor as well, isn't it, for Hartley, that he knows that people don't all agree with his position as captaincy and with him in the team. For Eddie Jones, it's kind of an easy motivational tool for him to say, you show them they're wrong, you give me your best, and I'll stand by you.
Completely. Yeah, I mean, social media gets destroyed on social media. You know, we all know there's a lot of haters out there for all of us.
But haters with a figure eight there?
And a Z.
He particularly divides opinion, shall we say. And not all of it in a flattering way. I mean, it's a big weekend. At the moment, we're at this stage of the week now where people are just beginning to name their team. Wales have just named their side to face Italy. Gav, 10 changes. A new captain in Talupi Falatau. James Davies making his debut in the back row, which I know a lot of Scarlets and a lot of Welsh fans will welcome the energy he might bring from the back row. Gareth Anscombe starting at fly half, and George North back in the starting lineup as well. So Gatland has rung the changes for a game that they would expect to win after the defeat to Ireland. And in terms of the Ireland-Scotland game, both teams have got players back from injury, so that's going to be an intriguing game. But I probably at this stage we should get Matt Dawson on.
The
Mirror's columnist, in association with Instant Offices.
Nice
Matt
plug.
Joins us on the pod to give us his thoughts on what we've got, particularly in France. Okay, we're now joined by Matt Dawson on the pod. Dawson, great to have you aboard again this week. Clearly,
For England, it's a difficult preparation for Paris. They weren't expecting to lose the game in Scotland. It changes the kind of the whole feeling among inside the camp, I would imagine. Just give us an insight into what those England players will be feeling coming off the back of a loss, knowing that they have to win in Paris.
They're going to feel a lot of pressure. They'll probably put a lot of pressure on one another. They would have spent the early part of the preparation on what went wrong. Hopefully, they discussed what went wrong, and then they've had a good couple of weeks to put into practice what they want to get right and what do they want to do against France. But I would like to think that the guys are going to be excited about getting straight back into an international game, opposed to, you know, losing a Grand Slam decider or a Championship decider and having a few months off. It's much better to be able to have that opportunity. And England, you know, having spoken to a couple of the lads, they were desperately disappointed. They were gutted. They thought that they had a couple of decisions that just didn't quite go their way and shouldn't have gone their way, but didn't quite go their way. And they want to make sure that they don't put themselves in those positions again.
How significant do you feel that the fitness bulletin that England issued yesterday is? The possibility that Dylan Hartley could miss the game. It's a calf strain. England are playing it down. But nonetheless, he is the captain. Second most capped player of all time for England. Could miss the game. Sam Underhill definitely out of the game. Jack Noel definitely out of the game. How significant is that news?
Yeah, it adds to the tally. Of injuries, you know, not just in England but across the international piece at the moment. But it is, because all of a sudden you've then got to bring players in that maybe haven't got that experience, don't have that ability to sort of understand the way that England want to play. It puts a little bit more pressure on the players to stay on the field a little bit longer, and these games are intense, where opposition may well be making substitutions and will be hanging on a little bit. And also, you know, we can't forget that the run that England went on, a lot of it was based on consistency. A lot of it was based on the selection being pretty much the same the whole way across. And now this England side is starting to look very, very different, which is exciting for a year or 18 months ahead. But right now, it does make it a little bit tricky when you haven't quite got that instinctive feeling around with the players that you're playing with. It is going to be a little bit trickier if those senior players are not around, because we know from that experience against Scotland that they do need to have experienced decision makers on the field, and that potentially would be a worry for me.
If Dylan Hartley's not fit, Jamie George starts, Owen Farrell presumably captains, Luke Cowan-Dickie comes on the bench. Just looking around social media yesterday, there were a fair few people thinking, I quite like the sound of that.
Yeah. There's plenty to be excited about with those players coming on. For looking into the future, looking into that 18 months to the World Cup and beyond, that's all very positive, because they're very good players and arguably deserve an opportunity. But here and now, as we're playing against France in Paris, and France have got some exceptional players, they know that they've got to butt their ideas up. And the rugby community know that it's only a matter of time before France do buck their ideas up. You don't want to be on the receiving end of a French side when it all clicks, and those players coming in would probably not have the experience to understand that. Will be very talented, very good players, but in an environment that they're maybe not quite used to, and that can be the difference between winning and losing the game.
France in Paris, as you say, are dangerous, yet it's very difficult for France to buy a compliment off anyone at the moment. Jerry Guscott, headline on his piece in the rugby paper this week, French team is so poor that England can recover their pride. You're a little bit more wary about the French.
Yeah, I always am. I mean, it is easy to sort of bag the French at the moment. They're disorganised off the field, in you know, whether it be the coaching setups that they've had, the selection that they've had, the inconsistency of selection. But you can't look at those list of French players and say as a group that, you know, they're not up to it. There are some very, very good names to go on that team sheet. And if whatever it is sparks them off throughout the week, whatever it is, it could be a moment in the first 2 or 3 minutes that all of a sudden gives them that confidence to run around with their chest puffed out, the French will be dangerous. Mm. England have that capability of quieting the crowd and quieting the French for the way that they play, and they play hard and fast in the first 10 or 15 minutes. So that's very positive for England. But they've got to make sure that happens, because they get into a position where they were against Scotland and they didn't necessarily know how to combat how Scotland were playing. England looked very vulnerable and looked like they couldn't play in the right areas and would have needed, you know, a real stroke of luck to score a try or break this game. You know, France will be looking for that. They will be looking to target the breakdown. They will be looking to be very physical and stop England's main runners, and they've got to be disciplined. If they are, then we're going to find ourselves in a scrap in Paris.
And we know with the French, historically, that if they get their tails up, they can be very difficult to beat. On the other hand, if you can discourage them in the first 10, 20 minutes of a game, their heads can drop, can't they? So it's so important that England get that first 20 right, in a way that they got it completely wrong at Murrayfield.
And even more so with this French side, who are pretty much thrown together last time round when they played Italy because of what happened up in Edinburgh. England do have got to play on that. They're a squad of players that know each other. There's going to be there'll be a few new combinations, relatively new combinations, admittedly, for England. But you'd like to think they're probably going to be more settled than France. If they can get off to that fast start that England like to do, then there is going to be a real opportunity for England to quieten everybody in a blue jersey and see the game out. If that switches around, if England are loose, if the referee gets a little bit carried away with being in France and the atmosphere, and a few decisions go France's way and England have to chase, then England are in for a really tough afternoon, which I sort of want to see. I want to see England struggle. I want to see England under pressure, because if they're going to win that World Cup next year, they're going to be in scenarios that they're going to have to deal with and dig themselves out. And they didn't dig themselves out against Scotland. And this week, they've got an opportunity to start again straight away and get themselves out of a hole on the field and all the media pressure that's around them off the field.
A final word on the other two games. Wales play Italy at the Principality on Sunday. Presumably you would expect Wales to win that. Ireland against Scotland first up on Saturday. Scotland obviously with their tails up after beating England, but they have it all to prove away from home in the Six Nations. It's been some time since they bossed a game away from home.
Yeah, I think Wales will be comfortable against Italy, and showed some glimpses. They want a little bit more consistency than they had against Ireland, and I think Gats will probably enjoy having Italy coming next, so they can build on that. I'm hoping the game of the weekend really is going to be in Dublin, with Ireland going for this Grand Slam. They will ordinarily, I think they probably would have thought, right, we're at home, it's against Scotland, come on, we can win this game, we've got a great record. But seeing how Scotland played the other week against England, they have never seen Scotland play as well. Scotland weren't lucky in any department. They were clinical, they were disciplined, their strategy was perfect. And they were very difficult to break down. And so Ireland have got their work cut out. They will be hoping that Scotland will probably be a bit overconfident after that England game and will travel like they did to Wales and not get it right. But I think again, because of the Six Nations, because you're playing these games back to back, you're learning so fast that I don't think Scotland are going to make mistakes like they did against Wales in the first round. I think they're going to be much more akin to the way that they played against England, and they'll make life tricky for Ireland. I think Ireland will win, but I think Scotland will make life tricky for them.
Well, it's going to be intriguing because clearly Ireland have the chance to wrap up the championship this weekend if they get maximum points, if it doesn't go right for England in Paris later that day. It's going to be fascinating as ever. Dawes, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming on the pod, and we'll talk again.
So Matt Dawson there, once again talking to us in association with Instant Offices, and once again bigging up Scotland, as we talked about in the last week's pod. For a Scotland fan like me, hearing Matt Dawson be so effusive in his praise of Scotland is a little unsettling. It's a little, just a little bizarre.
I must have missed that. Did he mention Scotland?
Well, he did, in fairness, mention that he thought Ireland would beat Scotland, but only after talking about how brilliant Scotland were. But very nice of Dawes to give us all that big up. I think, frankly, he's probably right, isn't he? That, I mean, you'd still expect Ireland to beat Scotland this weekend. I say that obviously as a Scotland fan who was jumping around and whooping and hollering after the Calcutta Cup. But as much as I think Scotland will certainly not repeat the, I was about to use a very rude word, poor show in Cardiff, where we got humped by Gales a lot, I think, I can't see us beating Ireland in Dublin, can you?
Well, there's two big reasons why it's unlikely. Ireland rarely lose at home. They beat England and New Zealand, the only two teams ahead of them in the world rankings. They beat them at home last season. And the second reason is Scotland's away record in the Six Nations is appalling. I mean, Scotland won in Australia last summer, so let's not be too whatever about it. But nonetheless, Ireland strong at home, Scotland weak away. You would imagine that if it's a close game, that will be what settles it, the determining factor. I thought it was interesting the way he spoke about France, because if you ask around and you read online and you read the newspapers, what's being written, nobody really gives France much of a chance. And yet Dawes has been there. He's been in Parc de France. He's been in Stade de France. He knows that when France get it right, when they turn it on, when they are able to flick the switch out of all the adversity which swirls around French rugby all the time, when they're able to get it right, they can be a different beast and a really dangerous beast. Now, it's been a while since they've done that. I think we've talked 2010, I think, the last time they won a championship. French rugby has been in a right mess. But you listen to him talking now, Dawes, and he's very wary about what they bring. He pulls out a lot of individuals who have got real class. You know, we look at Machinot, the scrum half, who's got a wonderful kicking boot. In the rich tradition of French rugby, they like their scrum halves to be the general of their team in a way that we look for our fly halves to be it. It's very much about the scrum halves in French rugby. Machinot is a great player, a really good player. And they've also got Mathieu Bastereau in midfield,
a
wrecking ball.
He's a touch of class as well. You can see it in the pitch. He's one of those guys who's just got a little yard in his head. He's doing a little bit more than the players around him. Love watching that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you, Alex, when you were talking to Dawes there, you know, I was a little bit surprised to see some people like Jerry Guscott kind of almost writing off the French team. It seems dangerous because, as you said, it's this odd thing about French rugby that you can go over the decades. You know, the players change, the coaches change, the domestic setup in France changes, and yet it always seems to have that same feel that they're a bit of a shambles waiting to suddenly turn into a little bit of genius.
Mercurial, enigmatic. Yeah. I think the key with France, particularly in this sort of state that they're in, is to beat them to the switch, is to stop them getting to the switch and being able to flick on the magic. Because if you start well, particularly in Paris, where the crowd are coming more in hope than expectation, if you start well against them, their heads drop incredibly quickly. Incredibly quickly. The game can be, you know, the game can be won in the first 25, 30 minutes. But if you let them get up ahead of steam, if their tails come up at all, then they can make it really uncomfortable. And England will be reliant upon, you know, Farrell to be kicking the goals to take them away. They will hope it won't come to that. They will hope to do to France what Scotland did to England a fortnight ago when they scored three tries in the first half. Scotland, who hadn't scored a try against England at Murrayfield since 2004, hitting them with three tries. They weren't expecting it. There won't be that element of surprise coming at England this time, because forewarned is forearmed after what they saw in Murrayfield. Nonetheless, France will have to
try to do that to get that head of steam up, because if they don't, they'll lose the game.
France have that incredibly annoying habit of being rubbish for ages and then turning in one wonderful performance, and you think, why bother? Either be rubbish the whole time or be wonderful the whole time. Don't be so inconsistent. They have a real habit of upsetting someone's apple cart, because it makes a difference in such a small number of games in the championship that you turn that unexpected performance on against one side could be the difference between Wales having an awful year and an acceptable year, for instance. But
France play from the heart.
Yeah.
England, more than anyone, play from the head. They play.
Which was almost the downfall of Murrayfield.
Do you know what? I was going to say that exact thing to you.
you knew it was coming.
No, but absolutely fair point.
Yeah.
You know, England went in there with all the theories. It doesn't matter about the history. It doesn't matter what Scotland do.
It was
if
Ben
we
Sayle
get our
you,
game right, we will win.
That was what Ben Sayle told you personally, wasn't it? The idea that, the history's not important. Yeah. You know, it's a game with two sets of posts and 30 men on the field.
And to be fair to Ben, that is what Eddie Jones is trying to create in their minds. He's trying to create a mindset that wherever they go in the world, because they're not going to win a World Cup final at Twickenham, because England's not hosting the World Cup this time. So he needs them to be able to go onto a pitch anywhere in the world and just see the post and the pitch and be able to put their A game out there. But as we saw in Murrayfield, there's a lot more to rugby than just that sort of theory. There's the psychology. And in the Six Nations, far more so than the World Cup, in the Six Nations, history plays a massive part. And those who ignore it, as England did last week, get burned.
Well, so as rugby fans, you know, people who follow the game closely on social media or through the papers or whatever it might be, everyone's going to have their theory on how England are going to tackle this and how England are going to bounce back from this defeat. You've been in the camp, right? You're in this privileged position where you actually get to kind of see and be around these guys and see the vibe. Have you noticed anything distinct over the last, you know, 10 days or whatever it is, where you've seen a shift or a particular type of attitude?
They make a point of trying to say business as usual, of trying to say we were a good team before we lost to Scotland. One defeat doesn't make us a bad team. And I think there is obviously merit in that argument, because you know, they have a back catalogue of success which dates back to the start of 2016 under Jones. Nonetheless, there is a slightly more of an edge to the way they've gone about their business this week. They know that as England players, particularly with a coach like Jones, back-to-back defeats could be fairly damaging for their career prospects in the Red Rose. They know that they can't really afford to lose this game, because not only will the championship go, but Jones will start looking to the next tier of players coming through. You know, England, more so than Wales, Scotland, Ireland, Italy, anyone else, England have got a pool depth, as deep as you want of players, and he won't be afraid to dig into the under-20s and pull a couple out.
And I suppose from Jones's perspective, when you're looking at a World Cup, the distance we've got between now and the World Cup, this is almost the last chance. So because if you're looking at next year's Six Nations, he hasn't got time to build a team out of the back of next year's Six Nations. If he's going to make changes, if he's going to say, right, this is going to be the guy I'm pinning my 2019 hopes on, he's got to do it now, because you've got to embed these guys and you've got to build this team around them. So actually, if the changes are going to happen, it's going to have to happen pretty bloody soon, isn't it?
But it's also a wonderful opportunity, because when they were just running off wins, back-to-back wins, you know, for 2 years, you don't learn an awful lot in winning matches. You know, whatever anyone tells you, you don't learn an awful lot, because it's just business as usual. All of a sudden, they're having to question all the procedures, all the plays, the body language of everyone, how they go about their business. Everyone has been called into question. Talking to Jones this week, he admitted he's been unable to sleep since the Scotland game. He wakes at 4 a.m., he gets himself dressed, he goes down to the office, and he has thoughts, he just files them off to all the coaches at 4 o'clock in the morning. He said sometimes he gets replies from people immediately.
That's what I was curious about. Who's replying to him at 4 in the morning, and what are they doing?
They probably know, right, Eddie's going to be getting up at 4, so I better set the alarm just in case I get an email. So I'm there ready to reply. I'm up too, boss. I haven't slept either.
Particularly this week,
If it's me, if I'm awake at 4 in the morning, it's one of two things. The baby's awake, or I'm out.
I can't honestly say, hand on heart, that work issues have me up at my desk at 4 a.m., but, you know.
Not yet.
Yeah. Give it time. Give it a little bit of time.
I mean, he's got to find a way to sort out the breakdown, which was catastrophic for England in Murrayfield. he's got to find a way to give England fast ball. And it wasn't just because Scotland was slowing down the ball. It was because England weren't putting enough numbers in. They weren't getting the balance right. And if England don't get fast ball and the opposition are then able to jackal all around them and cause problems, England start to look very ordinary. The magic that they're capable of engineering through Farrell and Ford when they're on the front foot with the sun on their backs suddenly disappears. You didn't see any of that in Murrayfield. I mean, Murrayfield was, as far as England concerned, was a one-man attempt by Owen Farrell to take on that nation of Scotland. You know, it began in the tunnel beforehand when he got upset about something, and he kind of took that fury into the game. And you know, he was head and shoulders above anyone else on the England team that day, I would say.
Yeah, it does seem to have been, because obviously there's always, after a result like that, there's always, you know, a lot of chat. And then actually it's only once you get a few days down the line, where we are now 10 days later, where people seem to have sat down and had some considered analysis, and everyone seems to have focused on the England back row. That seems to be what all the pundits are talking about, all the experts are talking about. Is that oversimplifying, or is it simply the case that if you're not doing the job at the breakdown, the three guys that are going to be in the firing line are your back row?
Yeah, it's oversimplifying it, in as much as in the modern game, it's not just the back row who are responsible for the breakdown. It's, you know, it's the front row. It's whoever gets there first, basically, has got to get the ball back, and you know, that becomes their primary responsibility. That said, the balance of England's back row has always been questionable, because they pick three second row forwards. They play either Courtney Laws or Mauro Itoje at six in the back row, and then they have the two locks. And by doing that, they then move Chris Robshaw to seven, who really is a six, who, for those not kind of right into the nuances of the game, if you play six, you're the blind side, which is a different role from the open side flanker in the back row. So Robshaw's out of position. So you've got three locks, you've got Robshaw out of position. And then England's additional problem in Murrayfield was that Nathan Hughes, the number eight, was coming back from injury, wasn't really fit enough. He lasted, I think, 56 minutes. They took him off. In that game, we talked last week about the power of a Billy Vunipola, or the power of Dean Richards in those games when England go to Murrayfield and really take the game by the scruff of the neck. They were not able to do that because they didn't have any carriers. They didn't have any big ball runners. And Nathan Hughes, if he doesn't have a big performance this week, England are going to be in the same position again.
It'd be interesting to get into the detail. I don't want to kind of confuse everybody, but getting into the detail of the breakdown and how it works, it strikes me that basically what you're saying is England didn't have a number seven, whereas Scotland essentially had two, because John Barkley is basically an open side, and you're Hamish Watson playing on the open side. So how would you describe to anyone who's not quite au fait with the details of a back row the difference between playing number six at blindside and playing number seven at open side?
I think essentially with the breakdown, it's a simple matter of getting to the ball first, what they call jackling over, because you have to stay on your feet, but then get over the ball, form a bridge, and then people come in behind you. So essentially, pure and simply, it's about just getting there first and getting the ball back. Now, whether you're a blind side or an open side, but the open side tends to lead the charge on those things, because the open side is the guy who's wedded to the ball. He is the link man in attack, follows it around, get it going. If you ever watch videos of Neil Back playing for England in his pomp, wherever the ball was,
Gav's favourite pastime.
Clearly, I was referring to Rich in the question, because I know that how much you love your English rugby, Gav. Yeah. But if you watch that, you could throw a blanket over the ball and kneel back most of the time. They were that close together. So in attack, it's about being the link man. In defence, it's about getting there first and getting the continuity of the play and getting it back.
I think there's also the massive complicating factor of the way that the breakdown's been refereed at this tournament. It's been variable, to say the best. But also, England's discipline at the breakdown was dreadful against Scotland. And you can talk about the refereeing of the breakdown, which every Wales fan has done in the last match particularly. But unless England's discipline is better in that area too, I think tactics can
become slightly
irrelevant.
There's one moment that sticks in my mind towards the end of the match at Murrayfield, where Courtney Laws just sort of stepped over the ruck and just kicked the ball.
It was like virtually wandering into a bar at night.
And I think it was pointed out that that was two. Scotland should really get two penalties for that, because, you know, that is that ridiculous. You've got to commit two offences in one movement. It was very, very bizarre.
You won the game. You don't need double penalties.
Still bitter. Still bitter.
double penalties against England should be a thing, shouldn't
absolutely,
it?
Just, yeah, and only against England as well, I think.
Bigger pool of players to pick from, we have to find little ways to handicap you.
Yeah, six-pointers across the board. Excellent, I like it. is it unthinkable that England would lose this game in Paris? I mean,
No, of course it's not.
I mean, in terms of... And when I say that, I mean that where we were... How we were looking at this England team a fortnight ago, the idea that on Saturday they might lose in Paris and how dramatically the perception of this team would have changed in the space of a fortnight would be astonishing.
Yes and no. I think a fortnight we were still reflecting on the fact that England went an hour without being able to score a single point against Wales.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were accrediting Wales with their performance. We were saying that but for a couple of decisions, one which has proved to be incorrect, Wales would have given themselves a victory chance. Whether they would have got it across the line is another matter.
So has this been coming then? Is that what we're saying? Is this kind of this? Wow. I wouldn't want to call it an England crash because that's a bit dramatic. But this kind of serious analysis of, hang on, where is this England team going? Has this been coming rather than this idea that this is just one shock blip and everything's rosy?
I think it's been coming insofar as over the last year or so, they had a very settled team. And they were able to achieve an awful lot in the first hour, and then they had this wonderful bench full of impact which came on and finished the game. All of a sudden you lose players to injury, the likes of Billy Vunipola, the likes of Ben Youngs, and all of a sudden you're bringing on guys like Danny Kerr to start the game. These are impact players to start the game. It gives it a different feel. All of a sudden England get to the 60 minute mark, the captain goes off as usual. They then bring the bench on, but they haven't got the great impact players that they had last season because half of them are starting, the rest of them are injured. So there is a different feel to it. We talked about the Wales game, England unable to score a point in the last hour of that game. The following game against Scotland, England failed to score a point in the last 36 minutes. You know, they got the try straight after half time, and then Scotland shut them down again. Now, that, for Jones, that's a major issue. You know, I think England, a team ranked number two in the world, effectively can't score a point. Well, what's that? That's 96 minutes of rugby in the last two games. They've been unable to score a point. Now, that's a big issue.
Quite remarkable.
You can't take away from the fact they've won 24 out of 26.
Yeah.
But when you drill into the minutiae of it, that is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does he solve it?
It might sound stupid, but you're not always trying to score a point when you're on a rugby pitch, are you?
No.
Sometimes you're trying to control the game. Sometimes you're holding the opposition where you want them to be, and you're putting them in a position, and you're taking a little bit of a breather and a little bit of a rest.
True.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that England don't want to score points the whole time, but there is a tactical element of that as well.
But you wouldn't. I don't think you'd make the case, Gav, that England were doing that against Wales in the second half, particularly.
No, they were trying very, very hard and struggling to beat us.
Yeah.
Our reserves again, even with some help from the TMO.
In fairness, there would have been spells in that Wales game when they were trying to shut the game down. You know, the last 20 minutes. Of course, they needed another three-pointer, really, didn't they, to put themselves 9 points clear. But they would have been saying, OK, whatever else we do here, let's not open the game up, because that's the last thing they want
to do. If you go back to November, England-Australia, Australia a better team than Wales, certainly in terms of head-to-heads, but you would argue a better team than Wales at the moment. Australia were within a score going into the last 15 minutes. England then slip up a gear. They score three tries in the last 12 minutes, and it's like a record win over Australia at Twickenham. That ability to step up a gear in the closing stages of matches, they've lost in this championship.
So is that something to do with, I know what you were saying about injuries and not having the impact off the bench, but does that say something about fitness as well, fitness level?
No, there's nothing wrong with the fitness. There's possibly a question as to whether they're overdoing it. Whether they're getting to the games and being
overcooked,
a little bit
training.
Yeah, a little bit drained, possibly.
You've talked in the last couple of podcasts about the remarkable intensity of some of these England training sessions, and this idea of Jones wanting the intensity to be actually higher than match intensity.
Yeah,
which sounds in theory like that's brilliant, that's revolutionary, that's great. But if you're knackered after an hour, then something's not right, is it?
And something is not quite right. You know, because Wales at home, Scotland away, with the greatest respect to both teams, shouldn't be insurmountable obstacles for a team which is coming into it on the back of one defeat in 2 years.
Yeah.
Clearly it has been a problem, and clearly there are issues to sort out. Now, whether you can sort that out by effectively just moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic and, you know, thinking, oh, we'll do such and such and we'll have a better attitude, or whether fundamentally you have to drill down into it and say, okay, well, let's get rid of the captain. Let's put Jamie George in. Let's see how it goes. Let's give Owen Farrell the captaincy. Mm. Let's see what sort of tune he brings out of the team. Do we even get rid of George Ford at fly half? Do we move Owen to fly half and bring in Ben Teo into midfield to give Bastroy something to think about? These are all considerations which Jones is going to be having at this moment. You know, he names the team on Thursday. If Ben Teo is in the midfield on Saturday, it will be of no surprise to anyone. It may well be that he comes in for Jonathan Joseph at 13, because Jones is desperate for Ford Farrell as a partnership to work, but he might have to review that. You know,
what would you do on those little options that you've just discussed there? Well, if you were the England coach right now, thinking about picking a team for Paris, what would you do?
I think, as much as anything, with Ford and Farrell, it has to be a longer term strategy than just one game. You've got to make your mind up about them, whether you think that they are going to be a winning combination come the World Cup in 2019. Now, if Jones believes that, then I think he's probably right to stick with them, you know, because you know, they've only lost one game, etc., etc. Ford and Farrell on the front foot, as we've talked about, are awesome players, but he needs to make a call on that, because if he leaves it too much longer, he's going to find himself, as Stuart Lancaster did in 2015, going into the games against Wales, Australia in the World Cup, and suddenly flicking Ford out the team, putting Farrell to fly half. You know, we're going to be repeating the scenario. So it's a really interesting stage, not only in the Championship, but in the four-year cycle for England going into this World Cup, what they do this weekend. It's going to be really interesting to see what he does.
I think there's inherent problems, isn't it? If you take the view, and to me, that's one performance that was exceptional from Scotland and unexpected, and an unexpected lull from England. It was an unusual set of performances from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I would be surprised to see, if you name the same England team at the weekend, that they lost to France. I just don't think it would happen. And you can say, oh, well, that still allows those players to make mistakes and become complacent because they know that they won't be dropped.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to back your players. Ford and Farrell, to me, are that bit of magic in the England side that perhaps doesn't feel rugby in the way that Scotland or Wales might do.
Mm.
England are a more cold and clinical machine, generally. You know, those guys are good to watch. They're talented and they can produce those moments. I think they change too much. You risk throwing the baby out with the bathwater for no reasons.
I agree with you as well.
To react to something that, as a manager,
sometimes
your job is to not react. Sometimes your job is to kind of go, I'm okay with that, you know.
And also, you've got to respect the character of your players. And I think Jones, Alex, you talked about this on other podcasts as well, about how for Jones, mentality and character and personality is such a big part of being an international rugby player. And so that would say to me that he's going to be looking at these guys and saying, right, well, it's up to you, isn't it? You lost that game. I didn't lose that game. You lost that game. How are you going to respond? How are you going to react?
I think there will be a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I agree with Gavin and with you, Rich. I think that he will leave largely alone. I think he might tweak it. He might bring Teo into midfield for the specific horses for courses challenge of Bastereau this weekend. He might tweak the balance of the back row. He might put, for example, he might take a Toji out of the team, put him on the bench. That would have the dual benefit of taking out a guy who isn't really hitting his straps in the team at the moment, but would almost certainly bring real impact off the bench in the last 20 minutes. And it might give a better balance to the back row if he brings Sam Simmons in at number 7, for example, moves Robshaw back to the number 6 position, which is best suited to.
Okay.
So he's got big decisions to make. But just in summary, I kind of tend to agree with you. He isn't one to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
It's a lot of analysis that for what's effectively going to be the second place finish in this table anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, it should be, you know.
Yeah. You know. Do you know, actually, well, on that note, we're running out of time here, but we've spoken at length about England. We haven't really spoken at great length about Ireland, who, you know, are, as we said, quite possibly... Even if England win in Paris, am I right in thinking Ireland could, if they, you know, score 4 tries and England don't, they could be champions, right?
Correct.
So that to me sounds horribly likely. I could see them scoring 4 tries against Scotland.
Yeah.
And I could see England winning without scoring four tries in Paris, and then game over, isn't it?
It is, and Ireland have, as we talked about before, they've got Ty Furlong back to fitness. Now they've got, I think, Ian Henderson's back to fitness as well. You know, big, big lions who were missing earlier in the championship. They should be, we've talked about it, they should beat Scotland at home. They should win the championship, you know. I don't think this Irish team would fear coming to Twickenham. Albeit if England were unbeaten, I think England home advantage would tell for England. But not being unbeaten, I think Ireland will fancy that trip to Twickenham now. If Ireland win the championship, there's no question at all they're going to deserve it. No question at all.
Oh, yeah,
because they've got that experience, that know-how, that battle-hardened quality from 1 to 23 in their team, you know, which makes them a real threat against anyone. And it makes it all the more remarkable that they screw up the World Cup every time.
It is quite astonishing, isn't it? And it is going to be a very odd final day if, and we are talking as if this is going to happen, but if Ireland do clinch the championship this weekend, and then you come to a situation where they're going to Twickenham, England don't really have anything to play for apart from pride.
Spoil the party.
And there's Ireland trying to win a Grand Slam. That's going to be an unusual setup, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you either go, you have the history view of it's wonderful when teams go for Grand Slams because that year then stands out as something special for a team, or you take the alternate view that wouldn't it be wonderful if four teams could still win the championship next week.
Yeah,
you know, it happened a couple of years ago, didn't it, when there was that kind of points fest throughout the final three games.
That's
on the last day.
Yes,
that
I
Super
forgot
Saturday.
About that. Didn't and weren't Wales playing first on that occasion?
Yeah.
And they put 70 points or 60 points on Italy or something.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
That's right, I remember that. Good boy. You still think Wales can win this championship?
No, in my heart of hearts, no, I don't, because I think
he's calmed down after last week.
After Wales by 10 in Ireland. He's calmed He's let that one go.
It turns out I had norovirus for a week after that. I think I was just hallucinating. But no, purely because I think that whether or not it's Ireland's home record or Scotland's away record, there's a transition happening here, which is a power shift. Scotland have gone back to that situation where there is no pressure on them to produce a performance.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that they're capable of stepping up to that mark. I think Ireland won't have a problem with that tag. I would be surprised if Scotland can turn in a similar level of performance. They're capable of it. They're very, very capable of it. But again, it comes back to that. There is no pressure on Scotland to produce that performance because you know that they can. And unfortunately, I just don't feel it will happen.
Well, the way we're talking about Scotland does suggest that forevermore it will be like one game at a time. One game on, one game off, one game on, one game off. Because we do seem to suggest
consistency.
Pressure's off, they play well. Pressure's back on, play badly.
And that's a challenge for Townsend and the team.
Yeah. Consistency is the mark of a good side. That's what's separate. Everybody has the ability to play at that level. That's why you're playing at that level. Mm. What marks the good from the great and the best from the better is consistency.
And finding that performance when not everything is naturally clicking.
And that's what Italy are going to be saying to themselves before playing Wales on Sunday. Have we got one big performance in this championship? Because Wales, just looking at Gav's face, I'm pretty confident about this one. And wouldn't it be delicious if Italy just threw a curveball?
Particularly as all the real action's on Saturday, and then you've kind of got, oh yeah, Wales, Italy on Sunday, yeah. Right. And it might all just be a bit like, oh yeah, right, that match, yeah.
While you're doing the ironing.
Watching Italy somehow do the unthinkable. It's not going to happen, is it?
I don't know. 10 changes to a side is a lot of changes to make to a side, particularly one that's not been playing particularly brilliantly. Even though we have lost a couple of games, we've lost them very close margins. We could have won against England, we could have won against Ireland. Sitting here thinking this is the championship of what if, and this game now becomes very important to us, because if the unthinkable happens against Italy, then suddenly you're looking at a pretty dire year for Welsh rugby in Six Nations terms. It's become really, really important that we win this game and we finish this championship as strongly as possible, so that we are sat here in 2 weeks' time thinking, oh, that just got away from us just a little bit. But if we can build on those positives going into the World Cup, there's something there to work with. If we don't do that, then suddenly we start looking at our feet and thinking, don't really fancy this World Cup.
And here's the beauty of the Six Nations. There's always something on, isn't there?
And the thing that gets me about the Wales Italy game is that there's yet another Jay Davies playing for Wales. How many Jay Davieses can there be? It's very, very confusing. Very difficult to keep up. On that note, we should probably round things up, I think, for this week. We've been talking for quite a long time. Quick predictions? Go on. One word predictions. Three matches.
England. Oh, one word predictions.
Okay. Oh, no, go on. I'll give you half a second.
I was going to say England in a fairly tight match, a lot tighter than people think. Wales with plenty to spare. And Ireland in a fairly tight match, probably by about 6 or 7.
I would probably agree with all of that, annoyingly.
So would I.
Which probably means none of that's going to happen, because all three of us have sat here and for the first time gone, yep, that all seems pretty straightforward. But as the Six Nations has shown us already several times this year, it doesn't often go to plan like that, does it? So hopefully there'll be a few throws and spills this weekend. Thanks again to Matt Dawson for joining us on the podcast again. Always good to have the expertise of a World Cup winner to call upon. And hope everyone enjoys the weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week. Cheers.
Ook bewust bezig zijn met je mobiel? Dat kan al voor €11 per maand met Mijn Sim Only. Nu met 100 minuten of sms'jes en 2500 MB 4G internet. Kijk op ben.nl.